And a few honored guests, so we are going to start with Senate Bill 16, hold a public hearing on Senate Bill 16. I guess we are opened as a subcommittee apparently until we have another senator who wants to show up and join us. So we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 16. Welcome Senator Yee and former President Brady Adams. Why don't you come on up, and Mr. Putman, you can give us a little information about the bill.
Chairman, members of the committee, it's a fairly straightforward bill that allows the legislator to ask for the appointment of a 20-member committee. It has 8 business people on it, 8 legislators, and 4 other persons. There's a -2 amendment being proposed that directs the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House to jointly select one of the 8 business members as the executive director to plan for these events. And just as background, we already have 4 sister state relationships, all of which are in Asia, plus we have a legislative relationship with the state of Saxony in Germany.
Okay. Senator Yee, you want to go first?
Thank you. I think I'm going to ask former Senate President Brady Adams to go first. This is his bill.
Okay.
My name is Brady Adams, private citizen from Grants Pass, Oregon. I did have the opportunity to serve in the Senate, and as Senate President, was involved in a number of state visits and trade missions to some of our sister state that we have throughout the world. And I have to tell you, I was very impressed with how we were treated, whether it was in Korea or China or Germany or any of the number of places that we have those relationships with. And it reminded me how important those relationships are and how we treat people when they come here, how important that is for us to treat them as well as they treated us. It's important because of the fact that international trade is becoming an increasingly important part of Oregon's economy. And what it means in your area and my area, and the bottom line is, a lot of jobs. I was talking to one of the people in my community that owns a small business that would be one of Senator Atkinson's constituents, where they sell equipment that monitors air pollution, and one of the countries that they sell to is China. And I don't know if you've ever been to China, but if there was ever a country that needed help in measuring their air pollution, that is a country that does need that. And as I talked with the person, I'd had the opportunity to visit the place where they produce these machines. And again, what that meant was family wage jobs in the community where I live. And when you have those type of relationships with other countries and sister states, they require some energy and effort and some coordination for them to be successful. This is especially true in the Asian countries, and specifically in both Korea and China. And we have no system, that I'm aware of, in Oregon that handles that very well. And the thought came up was, why don't we start a sister state committee that would give us a mechanism to be able to continue those relationships on a quality basis on an ongoing period of time. And so Senator Yee was kind enough to work and put some material together, and we're here today asking the committee to consider the establishment of sister city committees so that when we have people coming from other countries to visit us, that we will be able to have a delegation to be able to meet and treat those people in a respectful way.
Okay.
And that we'll also have a mechanism in place to continue those exchanges, because sister state relationships make no sense if you're not visiting each other on an ongoing basis. And so I'm here today to ask you for your consideration of this particular bill and hopeful passage of it so that we can continue to improve those relations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, I'm State Senator Mei Yi, representing Senate District 19, which consists of portions of Linn and Benton counties. I thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 16. Senate Bill 16 establishes a sister state committee to promote sister state relationships. The committee will host visiting delegations and organize delegations from Oregon to visit our sister states. These trade missions improve friendship, understanding, and cultural and trade relationships. Take our sister province, Fujian, for instance. Oregon sent delegations to Fujian province in 1992, 97, and 99. I was privileged enough to participate in these trade missions, and each time my fellow legislators remarked that they didn't know China was so developed, especially in the large cities, and that Chinese people are so friendly, and there is so much history in China. Oregon is not very well known in China, but we have an opportunity to change that. We have a great deal to offer to meet China's developing needs. China is one of the fastest growing markets for agricultural wood paper products in the Pacific Rim. And high technology is one of the fastest growing import sectors in China. Environmental problems facing China will create huge market opportunities for Oregon's environmental services and products as well. A China market study commissioned by the Oregon Economic Development Department shows that Oregon is underrepresented in the China market, ranking 25th among other states in terms of export growth. Last May, former Senate President Brady Adams led a 21-member trade delegation to China. There were five legislators, their spouses, as well as 10 trade delegates representing small and medium-sized businesses such as the grass seed, food processing, forestry engineering, agricultural machinery and equipment, environmental protection and recycling industries. We were joined by seven additional trade representatives from AOI Wood Products Company, Forest Nurseries, and Construction Facility Management Firm at a Sustainable Development Seminar, co-sponsored by the Oregon Sustainable Development Center and Shanghai Environmental Protection Agency. Although it was only a two-week trip, it gave us a close look at the environmental peril that China faces. The mayor of Shanghai, Mayor Su, is anxious to start a working relationship with Oregon, and in using the air quality and urban planning model that Portland Metro is currently developing. I'm pleased to report that a delegation will be coming from Shanghai for this purpose later in mid-April. In addition, the Minister of Agriculture in Beijing is interested in developing a demonstration pasture land project in Inner Mongolia using Oregon grass seed. The development of pasture land and reforestation of China in its central western provinces is critical for China's environment. Beijing just endured 12 dust storms last spring in 4 months. Usually, China experiences 2 to 3 dust storms in a decade. Everywhere the Oregon delegation went, we saw that there was a real need to build more water treatment plants to improve water quality. These are critical issues for China that Oregon is in a unique position to assist with. Legislative trade missions are important. When high-level officials visit, doors are opened that normally would not be. The mayor of Fuzhou, capital of Fujian province, for instance, offered a special exhibition area to showcase Oregon products in their international conference and exhibition center during our visit. Just recently, one of the trade delegates who went with us to China announced that because he made such good contacts during the trip and sees enough of a potential market for his products, that he is opening a trade office in Beijing. I think he is here today. He probably will be testifying later. Mr. Root is here from Medford. It is important that Oregon to maintain regular visits with our sister states to renew friendships and discuss various opportunities with China's high-level officials. Oregon has an old friend in the former governor of Fujian province and former mayor of Beijing, Mr. Jia Qingling. He visited Governor Pitzhaber while he was governor of Fujian. He is now party secretary and one of the top officials in China. We have always called on him when we visited Beijing. He played an important role in our appointments with the other high-level officials and ministers in Beijing. In Shanghai and Fujian province, we presented two scholarships for two graduate students to come and study in our universities in environmental sciences, and they are expected to be here this spring. At this time, I'm submitting two amendments, Senate Bill 16-2 and Senate Bill 16-3, for your consideration. The amendments propose that one, Senate and House leaders shall jointly appoint one of the trade delegates to act as organizer of the trip. Since I'm going to be term limited in 2 years, I want to make sure that an organizer will be there when the trip is scheduled. Two, the option of inviting a statewide elected official to participate in the trade delegation at the Sustainable Development Seminar in Shanghai last spring. There was a request from the Shanghai government to have a bond specialist to explain the finance of how to sell bonds. We thought at that time the state treasurer would be the right person to explain it. They later changed their request. Three, make the requirement of the former member of the Senate and the House interchangeable so that, for example, if there is no former House members interested in going, and if there are two former Senate members who wish to go, this would be allowed. Four, make the trip occur every 2 years to maintain good communication and an ongoing trade relationship. In summary, China, with its 1.2 billion population, is experiencing tremendous growth. Oregon is a leader in high-tech agricultural forest products and environmental protection industries. With Oregon's geographical proximity to China, we could be a natural partner. Oregon should capitalize on this opportunity. This bill has a very minimal fiscal impact. Everyone who participates in these trips pays his or her own way. I urge your adoption of the proposed amendments and urge you to pass it with a strong do-pass recommendation. And I'll be happy to try to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Senator Yee. Brady, if you wouldn't mind just sitting down, I've kept the Senate President waiting now for a good 5 minutes, and I hate to do that.
I don't blame you.
So, Mr. Chair, I'll never get to ask this question about ex-senators who are now bankers in leather jackets, I guess. Well, not real leather, knowing Brady.
Yeah. Thank you very much for allowing me to step in, and I'm not going to be near as long-winded as my friend here. I just have a couple comments to make, having been involved somewhat in the Orient for a number of years. And I guess the point that I would try to make to you is that Oriental people do business differently than we do in this country.
Mr. President, I've been informed. I have to remind you that we don't know who you are yet.
Oh, I'm not. Okay, I'm not sure who I am either sometimes. Yeah, Gene Durfler, representing the Salem area in the Senate.
Thank you.
A comment I wanted to make before I got interrupted was that the Oriental people do business differently than we do. I think in our country, it's business to business. In the Orient, it's government to business. you don't do business in the Orient unless you've established something, some political connection. And so for that reason, I think the sister cities would be of value, especially in the Orient. I'm not sure in Africa if that type of thing is done.
It's the very same.
Certainly in Europe, if you're going to go to business in Europe, you wouldn't go to the government, you'd go to the local company over there. But if it's that way in Africa, and also perhaps, I know it is in the Orient, because I've been involved in Oriental business since the early 60s, and I know that business is done through relationships of government, not through companies. So for that reason, I think sister city programs for those areas, it really does add a lot. It opens the door for business that can go in and then do business. So that would be my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay. And with that, I need to get back upstairs.
Okay.
Thank you.
Leave quick before we ask the question. Jim, go ahead. Jim is a neighbor of mine. I appreciate you coming today, Jim.
Thank you, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jim Myers. I am the owner of a small import-export company. I also represent the Northwest Wood Products Association. I'm on their board of directors. I was privileged to participate in this trade mission last May, and it certainly opened my eyes to the opportunities in China. I've had about 20 years experience importing and exporting from Latin America, and one of the things that I've found that's extremely important is that it is important to have a strong understanding of the country that you're working with, the culture, the customs. And I think this bill would certainly help facilitate that. I applaud the committee for the work that they've done on this, and I certainly think that the cooperation of business and government would certainly benefit us in the state of Oregon. I'm working on some other committees which are involved with some of our lesser-known species, tan oak, madrone, juniper, wood products that could be used in some of these Asian countries. And I found that the reception over there was very, very cordial, and feel that this bill would certainly help facilitate more of those trips, not only to China, but to other countries. I didn't go totally blind. I had done some research before we went to China, but I was very surprised at the advancements that they have in China, certainly in Shanghai. And I actually left our group and spent another 10 days working in Shanghai developing some business relationships, and feel that it was extremely beneficial. So that's all that I have to say.
Appreciate you taking time to come in this afternoon. You must be Mr. Root.
I am, yes. Jim Root from Medford. I'm the president of Sabroso Company, a food processing business there. I'm a strong believer in the sister relationships. I served in the 1980s on the State Economic Development Commission and was involved in the formation of the sister relationship with Oregon and the Fujian province. And I was very excited about the formation of that sister relationship, and then somewhat dismayed with Oregon's lack of support for the relationship in its early days, and now very encouraged with the support for the relationship. I really feel that a bill such as this will help with that support. We need to nurture these relationships, and this will be a very good avenue for doing that. I also was fortunate to travel on Senate President Brady Adams' trade and friendship mission in June. And it was my first return to China in 15 years, and I marveled at the changes and feel that there are many, many opportunities for Oregon businesses there at this time. Just to give an example of my own experience, out of the mission in June, My company has secured two commercial relationships, one in the Shandong province and one outside of Beijing. And shipments from Oregon are now progressing to China. Had an interesting development in the Sichuan province where I did not expect to do business, but ended up making a very nice government contact and friendship, which is starting to develop business in the Sichuan area that was totally unanticipated. Also out of that, over the course of the summer and the fall, I've been involved in the negotiation and establishment of a sister school relationship between the Sacred Heart School in Medford, Oregon, and the Chengdu Experimental School in the Sichuan province. And this is just some of what comes out of these sister activities. These are both high-tech schools with internet capability, digital imagery technology, and there are pen pals that actually sit, look, and talk with each other in the course of their relationship. I also just completed negotiating a relationship, a sister relationship, between the Wulong Giant Panda Bear Research Center, which is a World Heritage Site, one of the top locations in the world for nature, and Yellowstone National Park, with bears being the principal focus of the of that sister relationship. Out of that also came an interest between Sichuan and the U.S. Department of Interior that are forging a joint nature-based tourism development agreement. And so you can see over the course of just a very few months, a lot of activity has taken place growing out of a trade and friendship mission. So I think we need to have the vehicle to keep these going. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, for your information, Mr. Root has adopted a panda in Sichuan province, and everyone who adopted a panda, that means they contribute toward the raising and the growing of the panda, they can name the panda. He has a very beautiful name for the panda he adopted. His company's name is Sobroso, which means delicious, and I asked him if he was going to name the panda Sobroso. They know. What's the name of
it? We did choose the name Shastina for the bear, which in Chinese translates to Shui Ting, which then translates back in English to lovely lady from the snow-capped mountain. So we came up with a better name.
Sounds better than delicious.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Gordley.
Thank you. And before
May, Senator Yee, could you stay there a moment? Thank you.
And particularly before Senator Yee gets away, I would just like to say that the state of Oregon would not be paying the kind of attention that we are to China without Senator Yee's leadership and support from former President Adams and now current President Dirfler, and I want to acknowledge that. The proposal before us is exciting. It is certainly something that we should do. It has application to relationships that we are building now in Mexico, certainly in Korea and in Africa. My experience leading a trade mission to Zambia in 1997 and also participating with President Adams and former Senator Lim on the Korea trade mission, these experiences helped me understand how important it is to establish a sister state committee. And again, I think the point that you have made, Senator Yee, and that was made by the previous witnesses about the importance of that and value of relationships, building relationships, as a prelude to all these other wonderful things that can happen around business and around business. Is the direction that we need to be heading. So I thank you for your leadership.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Gordley, for your remarks. I think in China, just as much as in other countries, you have to have friendship and trust when you before you can do trade and business with them. So I think the friendly delegation would be a real help.
Thank you, Senator. Hey there, we have one more person signed up to testify. George, is it Oculit?
For the record, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is George Okulich. I'm the legislative assistant for Senator Kate Brown. She asked me to come here today and to read a statement that she wrote earlier. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for hearing Senate Bill 16 today. For the record, I am State Senator Kate Brown, representing Senate District 7 in Southeast Portland. I apologize for being unable to personally speak before you as I am not feeling well. Senate Bill 16 establishes sister state committees to promote Oregon sister state relationships. The committees will host visiting delegations and organize delegations from Oregon to visit our sister states. I can say from personal experience that these delegations do indeed improve relationships and further enhance trade opportunities with Oregon's trading partners. Last year, as a member of the Friendship and Trade Mission to China, I had the great opportunity to witness firsthand the value of these contacts. Along with delegates representing Oregon's small and medium-sized businesses, I saw the need in China for many services and products in which Oregon specializes. These include grass seed for pasture land, water treatment facilities, and air quality controls in China's urban areas. After my visit to China, I was very confident that the contacts we made would result in expanded trade between Oregon and China. Oregon currently ranks about 25th among U.S. states that trade with China, even though we are one of their closest U.S. neighbors. China's fastest growing markets are high technology, wood and paper products, and environmental sustainability services and products, all things that are Oregon's largest exports. These delegations of Oregon's business and government officials do have a large impact on our foreign counterparts and provide opportunities that may not have been available prior. I again urge passage of Senate Bill 16 as a very inexpensive method to promote Oregon's businesses and enhance the state's trade economy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Yee, we have a -2 and a -3 amendment you have presented to us. On the -3, I see a handwritten note on the bottom of my copy. Did the copy machine not give me the whole amendment, or?
I was trying to save paper.
Now, Senator, coming from someone who makes their living by cutting down trees to make paper, not the proper thing to say.
My husband is in energy producing generation business, not in forestry industry.
you have the entire amendment then?
That's the entire amendment.
But mine is a hand and grows version, which is but you do have the.
It doesn't have the end mark.
Yeah. Okay, that answers my question. We did not schedule this for a work session today, so we will put it back on the agenda for Monday. Make that Wednesday. We'll be on the 24-hour deadline for Monday. We'll put it back on the agenda for Wednesday next week. Thank you very much for bringing this forward.
Thank you.
That will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 16. Thank you, Brady, for coming up today.
You're ready.
We will now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 559. Representative Atkinson is making his way to the dais. Representative Tomei, would you like to come up
leave
and
then
time?
It should be a quorum.
Mr. Putman, would you like to give us a little a brief update?
That's pretty tricky, Jason, to have somebody I like up there testifying.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this bill creates a rent subsidy program for the owners of manufactured homes who live in a manufactured dwelling park. If they're 65 and if the members of that household have a combined income of $25,000 or less, there are tax credits for making donations to the program. There's also in the bill an appropriation of $50,000 for the general fund. And there are also provisions in the bill to limit the length of time a person can draw this and to allow exclusions or reductions if other members of the household have had subsidies in the past.
Senator Atkinson.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Move to a work session because of the partisan dynamics of the committee at this point, Madam Chair.
Mr. Corbin. For the record, my name is Jason Atkinson, State Senator, District 25. Joining me on this particular bill is Senator or Representative Carl Wilson, who does not have committee on 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon and has already headed back to Southern Oregon. I think the thing that's interesting about this bill is that our previous bill had the past most senior member of the Senate testifying in a bill that probably will make it all the way through the system, yet I am here testifying on a bill that begins today being troubled. So the question is, why am I walking down this plank? For several reasons before I get to the bill. Foremost is that I believe in old-fashioned grassroots campaigning, and I actually go and talk to people, thousands upon thousands. The last time I think I campaigned, I doorbelled on over 12,000 people's doors. And many of those people are low income and they're senior citizens. Secondly, my own grandmother lives in it would fall under a similar program as this. She's lives on a fixed income. She's low income. She lives in a park that particularly is out of state, in which they have rent control. My wife's grandparents live in a park that does not, but find themselves in the same situation. And so how do you rectify these two situations of which you have low-income seniors who live on a fixed income who do not exactly have their expenses fixed? We all know, especially from the discussions around the budget that we're having right now and programs such as Project Independence, that it is far more cost-effective to keep people in their own homes if it can be done. So it's with those interests that I created this particular bill. This particular bill also has the effects, hopefully, of just beginning the discussion. And so what this bill tries to do, as you'll see, there's several blank marks in this bill, because I wanted the discussion to be started before actual amounts were put into place. But in summary, this bill creates a rent subsidy program to benefit low-income seniors of persons 65 years of age or older residing in manufactured dwelling parks. It creates a tax credit for donations to rent subsidy programs. And it also allows some flexibility. As I started to work on this and think about it, I wanted to limit the amount of time that people could be on this particular program. I also wanted to limit the amount that somebody could receive a tax credit if they were to donate to such a program. And I wanted to start small enough that we could actually get something started to see if it would work. And I thought that the bill, or at least the concept of the bill, could begin by simply having the discussion open. But as you'll see from those who are here to testify, friends from both sides, some are going to say that it's too much, some are going to say that it's not enough, but yet here we are opening the discussion. So that is the general gist of the bill and where I was coming from in the creation of it. And with that, I think I'd be more than happy to answer some questions. But I thought I would give you at least the background of knowing where I began down this road. Because here in Oregon, I think there's some real troubles if you compare, at least as I have, between rent control. I think that if you go down that road, it has some real problems, especially as you compare from a policy standpoint, compare other states who've adopted it in various differing degrees. There's several problems with it. Market problems. I mean, I don't want to get a macro lesson in economics right now, but I mean, I think you all have heard a lot of those debates. Secondarily, people who I know who are living on a fixed income, who are senior citizens, I think in this particular version of the bill, I have a means test of $25,000, find themselves in situations where as years go by, they find themselves further and further pinched at the end of the month. And so I think with that, I bring you the bill. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions. I'm eager to hear some of the discussion, And if the bill only does that, I will be satisfied. But I, you know, in a perfect world, we would find out the answer to this problem.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
I just want to remind the young senator that in my first primary campaign, I won by 172 votes, and my wife said that was the 172 people that weren't home when I campaigned. Thank you very much.
May I respond?
If you feel you
must. You know, I better not respond.
May I respond?
You can. Yeah.
No.
Representative, would you like to go ahead, please?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Beyer and committee members. It's my pleasure to be here this afternoon to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 559. For the record, I am State Representative Carolyn Tomei from House District 25, which covers Milwaukee and the Oak Grove area. I've been the mayor of Milwaukee for the past 3 years, and I was on the city council for a year before that. And like a good senator here, I also campaigned by going door to door. And I know that I have more senior citizens in my district than in any other district in the state. And many of those folks live in manufactured homes. And I would venture to guess that I may have more manufactured home parks in my district than in any other. And one of the things that I heard from these folks, I heard this from many retired folks, many folks who have lived through the Depression and through the Second World War, who with rising property taxes are fearful that they're going to lose their homes. And they remember their own families who lost their homes during the Depression because they could not keep up the payments. And people are especially fearful in living in manufactured home parks because they're seeing their park rents rising much higher and much faster than for many of them who are living on Social Security. No one, especially seniors who have given so much, and many of these people have lived in these mobile home parks for over 30 years. I went to the door of one mobile home park, and as you know, on the forms that we have when we're going door to door, it gives a person's name and their age. And I knocked on this gentleman's mobile home door, and he called for me to come in, and I did, and I looked at him across the room, and I said, "Are you Mr. So-and-so?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "Are you 100 years old?" And he said, "No, I'm 101. Many of these folks, as I say, have lived there for many years. These are their homes, and they are fearful of losing these homes. And they tell me stories of their residents, of their neighbors who have lost their homes because of rising rents. As the Speaker of the House said earlier this session, senior program funding is a question of human value, not financial gain. We all know on this side of the fence that we are looking at every dollar that goes out of here, and we're looking at them very carefully. This, I think, is a good bill. I think we're looking at a fairly small amount, $50,000 from the general fund, and as I understand it, only $10,000 would be meted out at a time, and when that $10,000 is gone, the e-board will review the account and make sure that the process is moving as anticipated. And the check and balance of this assures that the intent of 559 to help fixed income seniors living in manufactured home parks through donations from the community are being met through those corporate and personal donations rather than direct funding from the state. And I think we should all support that. I certainly support this bill and thank our good senator for writing it and for the common sense approach to responsive, more responsible government. And I would urge you to do the same. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak before my first Senate committee.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Tomei.
Oh, let's make this interesting, Mr. Chair.
Oh, God.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
At this time, we had a couple people signed up on the wrong bill. They wanted to speak on Senate Bill 16, but they signed up on this bill instead. So
I thought you were going to say on the wrong side.
I'm going to temporarily recess the hearing on Senate Bill 559 and reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 16. We have two people, Mr. Bill Winner and Nachin Zo. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay.
We lost a good senator accent, I see. Go ahead and take it.
Okay. My name is Bill Winner, and I was a part of the trade delegation that went to China, and since I've also served on the task force for China relations that was formed after the delegation returned. And I urge you to support the bill and vote for it. And I do so for several reasons. Not only the reasons that have already been mentioned, but I'd like to bring forward a couple of others. Since we returned a year ago, I've personally been involved with at least six or seven of the delegates who were on that trade and friendship delegation, both directly and indirectly, and can attest to the literally more than dozen visits that have taken place following the trade delegation's trip last spring. And so the point is that from not only what the Brady Adams delegation was able to do, but from the other ongoing services provided by many other people working within the state of Oregon and within business in Oregon and within educational communities in Oregon, there's going to be enormous exchange of personnel, both Oregonians going to China and Chinese visitors returning back to Oregon. If we don't have some sort of infrastructure and some sort of coordinating system for keeping track of and managing the personnel, it's going to be difficult to have an overview of exactly who's visiting and who's going and who's coming. And we're seeing examples of that now where there's so many exchanges taking place, it's difficult to see the overall picture of how business and education are growing and how these services can be integrated. So I urge you to support 16 for the reasons already mentioned and the idea that there will be many more visits in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Senator and the chair, my name is Nathan Zhou. I'm the president of MCY America Corporation. I'm also a member for the delegation. The same period we visited China in the last year. Here, I just want to say one thing is because I'm a Chinese also, and I'm born in China, and I know that it have a little the cultural difference with the West side and the China society. The China is the Chinese, you will see that they will give the educate or give this kind of host or the entertaining to the guest and the friend typically. So I think is I read that bill and I think form that kind of the committee is necessary. And typically when the China delegation visit us, we have a formal way to invite them and can also is do the same, the equal way to welcome them also. So I think is, that bill will be, helpful to develop the business with the Chinese typically. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for coming in today. Sorry, I missed you on the first time we were here. Okay, great. Yeah. All right, thank you very much. We'll close this hearing on Senate Bill 16 and go back to the hearing on Senate Bill 559. Pat Schwach. And you've got marked that you're for, against, and neutral.
That's what I mean. I'm not sure what's going on.
First time I've ever seen that.
Well, you'll find out in a minute why.
Go ahead.
Okay. Senator Beyer and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Pat Schwach. I'm Executive Director for Manufactured Homeowners of Oregon. I've read with interest Senate Bill 599, and I'd like to offer some comments. I'm pleased to see the legislature attempting to address the problems this bill speaks to, the continuing escalating rents in a market that is not free, namely manufactured homes. From the information that comes through our office from members and non-members alike, the need for assistance far exceeds the amount of funds that might be available from this effort. I receive several letters each month from residents who are very elderly and are living only on Social Security. They speak of having $600 a month to live on, and that in most cases the rent takes in excess of one half of their income. When we look at the fact that there are over 60,000 spaces in Oregon, and that many of those parks are older parks full of people who have lived there for 25 or 30 years, it is obvious that there are a lot of older people who need help. There are also those who are disabled and not seniors, and I wonder if those people would also need to be given assistance. As most of you are aware, there's a coalition of landlords and tenants who have been working for several years to address the issues both groups deal with. MHCO floated an idea in the coalition this spring or winter and to their members regarding assessing every park owner a $10 space rent fund to fund this program for people who were struggling to pay their rents each month. I don't know where this has gone because there's been no further information circulated in the group. The residents were not terribly excited about the offer because we knew that those amounts would be passed on in the form of rent increases. Post has been talking about a proposal that would be more fair to the park owner who is a good guy, yes, and we know there are good owners out there, and we thank and acknowledge them. We'd like to see a percent of the gross revenue of each park put into a fund. This would make the most of the worst offenders pay their share, and the good owners would not be penalized by paying the same amount as the abuser because their revenue would not be as high. We have a couple of parks in Salem that we frequently cite. One park is owned by a man who lives in the park, and his rents are $3.25 a month. The other park, which has an out-of-state owner, the rent is $457 a month. The park that has the 209 spaces and the other one has 219 spaces, so they're essentially the same size. If a fee of 1% was assessed, the good owner would pay $8,000 a year and the abuser would pay $12,000. We're not married to the 1%, so that's not a big issue with us. Under the idea floated by MHCO, the abusive owner would pay only $100 or more, a year more than the good owner who didn't create the problem of excessive rents. We appreciate Senate Bill 599, but feel that it's not going to solve it, but at least we're opening the door to address some of these issues that I think all of us are becoming more and more aware of. Thank you.
Thank you. Assistance. Thank you very much. John Brenneman and Alan Connolly, and Chuck Carpenter.
How about Chuck with me, too? Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm John Brenneman. I'm the lobbyist for the Manufactured Housing Communities of Oregon. And with me today are Alan Connolly on my far right, who's the legislative chairman of MHCO, and our executive director here in the middle, Chuck Carpenter. I'm going to make the presentation, I think, to Dan Allen, is the one that put together our prior presentation to the Landlord-Tenant Coalition for discussion, and he can relate details of that if you want to listen to him. How did I sign up on there, Mr. Chair?
How did you sign up?
Yeah, did I sign? I didn't sign up in a position, did I?
No, you didn't.
And there's this old adage in politics that you never come in and shoot the guy's dog right in front of him. And but Senator Deckert will probably disagree that I don't always follow that advice. I see him nodding.
Bad dog.
Well,
Mr. Brennan.
Pardon me.
Senator Atkinson.
I like dogs.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Atkinson. Yes, sir.
Okay.
There's a good reason that there are a lot of low-income people in parks around the state is that we provide low-income housing, affordable housing. And we do so in many parts of the state at, I'm sure, what you'll find are not very controversial rates, especially when you go east of the mountain. But land prices are cheaper east of the mountains. And we've got areas of this state where land prices are, frankly, going out of sight. If you read today's Oregonian, there's a very good article that explains it all. It wasn't in this instance about manufactured home parks, but it was about a gentleman that's been displaced and moved out of his low-income apartment in downtown Portland because it's going to be converted. And that's what you face in the state. If you really want to go at the heart of the good part of what's going on, you got to figure out how to get that land cost down, government action down. We have park developers. We're going to bring one in later when we get over on the other side when there's a discussion of rent control in parks that will testify that his park in Salem, done in three stages. His first stage, he had about $10,000 per lot. His second stage, that figure jumped up to an excess of $15,000 per lot in development, and in his third stage, nearly doubled that and is up somewhere around $27,000 per lot. And a lot of those are instances of costs that are being borne by the resident in there are not within our control. That Oregonian article, if you haven't seen it yet, I'd really recommend that you take it out and look at it carefully, because you have a real housing problem. It's not just manufactured home parks. We just happen to, as been pointed out, have a lot of low-income people. Alan made this similar proposal, and Pat was addressing part of that. One of the things, or a couple of things we wanted to do, was to have a moratorium in the bill, a five-year sunset, something like that, that we could take a look down the road then and reassess the plan. And we also asked that the rent control actions being taken by residents, both in the legislature and through the initiative process, be put in abeyance during that time. And that's another reason I think that it was not supported by the residents. But what we have right now in our group is a group that's really split on such an issue. We've had a lot of our membership support it wholeheartedly and say, that's positive, let's move on. We've had another strong percentage in our group that think we're taking on too much of the responsibility as an organization. And one thing other that it did was that it sparked a conversation in the Landlord-Tenant Coalition, and we had a presentation by Housing. They came in and pointed out just how many programs are already available for people with a problem paying the rent. And I know probably that many of you have not really had a good look at those programs that are available. We certainly didn't know that it was as extensive as it is. And if you as legislators don't know about a lot of the programs, imagine the fact that your constituents, the ones that need it, don't know about them either. I would encourage the committee and you as legislators to try and educate yourself so you can help your constituencies when you run across somebody that needs some help, because the programs are out there. And we constantly face those arguments in the legislature about the state helping out with rent control. There have been statements already made today by the bill sponsor that, in his opinion, it's not a very good idea. I've found in doing a little bit of research lately that we have a lot of people around that are pretty expert in the area. And in fact, I've run across a professor at Portland State that I hope to encourage to come to the legislature and impart some of his knowledge. He's written a book. It's called Scarcity by Design. I found a copy on the internet and have one copy. I make it available. I'll buy others and make them available to any of you who want to read the book. It's primarily about how to destroy housing and how it's been accomplished in New York City, pointing to the fact that it's had rent control since World War II. So if you have that interest, I'll get that book for you to read. It's not very long. This professor is a professor of urban studies at Portland State, and I don't know if I can get him to come in the middle of the battle in the legislature, but I'm certainly going to try. However, all that being said, I think would have to say at this time that as a group, we really can't support moving the bill or working on it at this point. And I don't know if you have any questions, but we're all willing to do that. I don't know if either of my colleagues have a statement to make in addition to what I've said, but that's the extent of my presentation.
Thank you. Senator Eckerson.
Go ahead, Senator Decker.
You sure? You might not get another chance.
Well, okay.
I have a list of 15 questions, Mr. Chair. Actually, no, I only have just a comment. Is that I had a similar experience in this last campaign that Senator Atkinson did and Representative Tomei did, of speaking, and it's in many ways an emotional experience of meeting and seeing people who are in a very, very difficult situation. And so I feel myself committed to doing something this legislative session with whatever I can do to help alleviate the circumstances that I know a number of seniors in. And I've become convinced that it's not everyone, but there are certainly a decent percentage of at least the folks that I met that are living in the situation that I think we have a state interest in at least helping alleviate their situation. And so I guess my question would be, what proposals do you support or would you bring to us to help deal with seniors on a fixed income who find themselves not able to pay the increases in rent?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Deckert, John Brenneman again for the record. I'll tell you that in my 8 years now associated with a group, I've got a lot of really fine landlords. I've got some that causes trouble and bring us into the legislature to fight a lot of bad ideas. But in my 8 years, I've come across a lot of people within my membership, and I'll tell you, Al Connolly might not like me pointing my finger at him, but he's a very good landlord. And one thing he does do when he has somebody in his park and he knows that they're in a tight budget situation, I know he's passed help to them, but he's kept it quiet. He doesn't want the others in the park to know that, and it happens in a lot of parks. When they know that a person's on a tight budget, they do get some subsidy. To come forward, though, at this time and support this program when we think, and we've learned that there are other programs that are available that the state provides, a good portion of our membership just don't think that it should fall on us to really make that full subsidy of a program on our shoulders. We think if there is that responsibility out there, and we think it is, then the state should probably more likely develop a program in which they put general fund dollars in it, and we already have that commitment too from programs that we've been told about in housing. But I think you ought to utilize the programs that are out there right now until you embark on another one.
Senator Ackerman, you still want to make comments?
Certainly. Here's a frustration I have.
first person, OSTA, got up and testified. They brought two ideas on the, here on the piece of paper. There's two ideas that don't have anything to do with my bill. And then when we're here testifying here today, talking about dogs being shot and whatnot, we're not really talking about the bill, which is fine. Last particular legislative session, I had a bill called the Senior Property Rebate Act. It went all the way through the chamber, got vetoed. But if you recall, the interest of that bill was to go back to a program that was called the HARP program. Remember all that? Mm-hmm. The HARP program from the 80s. It was eventually phased out. And what it did is it just added some relief. And so what I tried to do on this particular bill is write something small, voluntary. We don't put the burden anywhere that the burden doesn't want to be carried, which is fine. And says essentially, what can we do? So I'm curious to know if this thing's so. I mean, perhaps you could. I'm curious to why is this a bad starting point? I mean, I've heard why everybody else's starting points are bad and other ideas won't work and all that. But I mean, this one wasn't totally germane, and I'm just curious as to what particular parts of this bill are so bad.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkinson, John Brenneman again for the record. I just don't think our membership, without some concession or give somehow or other, are willing to put any charge at this point, additional on the spot, and move forward. Today, as an example, I know people get sidetracked. There were 13 bills in today's bill package dealing with manufactured home parks. Yesterday there were two different rent control bills. We feel like spear catchers. And I'd be happy to come to your office and sit down with you in the next day or so if you want to further discussion.
Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
I'm not throwing any blame or anything. I'm just saying I don't know what the solution is. I know it doesn't work if you compare it to other states. I don't believe that rent control is just pure rent control as a works. I think it does two things. I think it takes away the incentive to run a good park, and I think it hurts inventory. That's what I think. And I think, you know, especially as the baby boomer generation grows, that this is going to become a bigger problem and not a smaller problem. So I think inventory, especially where I live, should be part of the market incentive that we as a state policymakers try to create, the market incentive to have more inventory out there. But I'm, you know, this is my stab, and my poor dog's been shot, and I can, you know, big boy, I'll get over it. I'm just trying to work here with both sides to figure out what it is in the middle. I will run the Senior Property Rebate Act again. It's in the pipe somewhere. Again, as all of you have heard my testimony, it's to me it's interest in getting back to like the HARP program that many of you recall from the 80s. But with that, I think you can see what a difficult, sticky, complicated market incentive, macroeconomic, legal oddity of somebody owning a building but not owning the land it's under, all throwed in with the emotions of people with good information and people with bad information and good park owners looking out for people. The park owner in my grandmother's park is a good park owner who looks out. This is complicated. So I thought we'd start, at least here in the Senate, talking. I'm interested in where we go. I'm not sure where we go, but I thought we'd start here.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Brennan, want to respond to the comment, and then we'll let you.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, in response, there are some good bills out there in the pipeline, too, that can address part of the things you're talking about. Next week, Representative Carlson has a bill up on the House side providing incentives to a seller of a park, an owner of a park, to an association of residents. And we would encourage those kinds of bills that, and there's another one in today's package from the Attorney General, trying to make it a little bit easier for housing to step in and facilitate some sales and allow
people in the parks to buy the parks. They're not all bad by our view. They're out in front of the legislature, but there are some good ones there too. And I commiserate with you. You're in your second session, and I did four sessions. And so I'm way ahead of you back in my past with how many complaints I fielded. And the guy on my right went through a couple of sessions and listened to the same tune.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Gurley.
Thank you. Well, first of all, it's great to see Chuck back in the building. I hope everything's going well for you.
Thank you.
You know, I didn't hear an answer to the question that Senator Atkinson raised, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering what other programs, Mr. Brenneman, you're saying to us that there are other programs out there that can provide help for these good folks, but what other program existing now addresses what this bill would do?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, there's not a program just like this. There are subsidy programs and rental assistance programs for Oregonians that need them. And I don't have that information with me today, but between Chuck and I think we can go back and get some of the outlines given to us and have copies made and present them to the administrator.
Mm-hmm. All right, okay. And just as a follow-up comment, Mr. Chair, what I'm hearing is resistance based on there are these other good programs out there, but I'm not really hearing, frankly, a really good reason, if you will, not to do this. I haven't heard that good reason yet.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, if it boils down to additional charges that are being placed on our members without any concessions, I'm sure I'm going to get a real strong opposition from my membership.
Under the bill in front of us, then, Mr. Chair, what kind of concessions would we be talking about? What?
There's none. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, there's nothing in that bill at this point.
I could probably answer a little further,
Thank you.
Chair. Under the bill as it's written right now, the people who contribute into the fund, the park owners, and so part of the burden that Mr. Brenneman is talking about is the fact that he feels like they're always under attack, and here they have to fund a program, which my intent was voluntary. I think if we were really serious about talking about this, we would talk about other means, perhaps leave that very small definition of people who can contribute out, probably make it a broader definition,
mm-hmm.
maybe even bring in housing. So that's part of the what I think now in hindsight I was trying to write a bill that would have no opposition. I think that's understanding now after between the time of writing it and learning even more about the issue, I think mm-hmm. that's probably a part of the heartburn. Secondly, I would also be curious. The housing, the director of housing was I think could probably provide this committee and all the other committees you're overseeing this particular issue information on whether subsidy programs are out there. I'm very interested in knowing. I actually asked that particular question to I think housing this summer, and they were in the process of getting some things printed, and I was in the process of probably not having a place for those printed materials to land. So perhaps it would be good for the committee to ask for those, you know, just directly from housing. And I think it would just be good for the discussion altogether.
Senator Atkinson, you've got to point me to the part of your bill that says that the donations to this fund have to be are coming from the park owners.
Okay.
The way I read it, they come from anyone in the state.
Yeah, I that was the what I described was what was sent to LC, and let me reread the bill.
Unless there's something, the question would be what are ORS chapter 316, 317, and 318? Those are chapter dealing with manufactured housing communities, then I understand where this is pointed to. But if those are standard chapters of revenue and tax law, then I believe this tax credit would be equal, would be available to anyone in the state. I mean, i.e., if Mr. Brenneman wanted to donate, you know, money to it, this fund, whether he's a park owner or not, he would be eligible for a tax credit. And to correct, I don't know. I don't know what those three chapters are without looking them up. But, Mr. Brenneman, can you answer that question?
Mr. Chair, I cannot.
That was the Mr. Chair. I will jump in here to help.
I'm confused by your testimony when you were talking about it. Okay, but go ahead.
I have to go back and, as Mr. Putnam was looking at those RRSs, that was the original way that the bill was, as I had written the bill. Whether or not that is this, again, as I said from the beginning of my remarks, this bill was even in this form, is still a rough draft. And the heartburn that was expressed early was expressed over that definition, whether or not it's in here or it would be after a worked draft. And you also see in line 10 some blanks that were left due to amounts for the very reason of starting the conversation.
Okay. Those three chapters are personal income tax, corporate excise tax, and corporate income tax. So this, the way I read this draft, anyone in the state who owes any of those three taxes would be eligible for a tax credit if they donated to this fund.
Right.
Okay. Yes, sir. Please state your name for the record, please.
My name's Alan Connolly. I'm a park owner from Albany, Oregon. I'm also chairman of the Legislative Committee for Manufactured Housing Communities of Oregon. And thank you, Chairman Beyer. And Senator Atkins, I, too, thought I was crafting something early in the meetings with the landlord-tenant group. To address this issue, I've been a park owner for 26 years. I've been in the rental business for over 40. Many of the residents that live in my park have grown old along with me. I recognize the fixed income, but not the fixed cost syndrome that we're dealing with, and it's certainly not unique to our housing. Apartment people living in apartments, people living in fixed stick-built homes are all suffering from this. One of the things that I had in my proposal was to create an information pool of all known sources of financial aid for residents, because there are a number of them out there. I don't propose to know all of them, but there are programs that the Gleaners, for instance, provide food. There are the Meals on Wheels programs. There are various groups. The utilities companies have programs to help fund their heating needs, to provide better insulation, insulated roofs on the older manufactured houses, the old metal roofed ones that were not heavily insulated. There's programs to put heavier insulated roofs on, to put more modern insulated windows and doors. I personally, in my park, have two residents that are receiving some HUD subsidy on their rents. Other people in my area who are in the business have not been able to find out how to get HUD subsidies for their residents. There's a lot of things available out there, but there's no central source of information to get them. I think a lot of people are suffering needlessly when there are programs available. A lady from housing, and I do not recall her name, came to one of our coalition meetings in response to my proposal and stated that that there could probably be much more funding available for people in this situation. There simply hadn't been a demand for it. So I think we are missing the boat here on some aid that could be brought forth. The thing that shot this down as much as anything were two items. One, the residents felt that we would be passing the costs on to them to fund this, and in a sense that's true. The residents provide for all the expenses that come from the parks. We don't have a money tree. We're not Washington. We can't sell bonds or something that may or may not be paid for. The second issue was is that I asked for some relief. I asked for a 5-year moratorium on these calls for rent control. That would give us 2 legislative sessions to fine-tune this thing and make it and maybe make it work better, and apply it to the people that are truly needy, and apply it now. Rent control won't do that. If we fixed all the rents in the state today at the level they are right now, the people that are in trouble right now would still be in trouble. And my concern was to try and to get to those folks.
Appreciate those comments. So,
thank you.
I think there's probably a lot more information, you know, available or needs to be retrieved by all sides on this issue, this bill specifically. I think none of us know exactly what it said. I know
the second
that,
shot.
I know that the House is working on this. Jenna, do you want to testify at this time?
Everybody.
Okay. Would Jenna want to testify on the bill, and then we will move forward.
It's Friday afternoon. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, I didn't.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jenna Ingram representing Multifamily Housing Council of Oregon, and I share that sentiment, Senator Corcoran. However, I did come here to maybe pet the dog, and
carefully might your hand shot.
Right, and just see where that gets me. And I do plan to speak to the bill, Senator Atkinson. My members, first of all, we're just looking at a couple of points for clarification, and then I'd like to get into some of the discussion that took place a little bit earlier. And I will be brief because it is Friday afternoon and we all have commitments. However, I just want to clarify for the record that in Section 2, when it refers to director, they are talking about the Director of Housing and Community Services Department. I didn't have a statute to reference back to, so I just wanted to make sure. The second thing that raised some eyebrows among my members, second page, line 10, I believe, the income limit, $25,000 or less, they wanted to make sure that that was realistic. We're not saying whether it is realistic or not realistic. We were just not privy to how that figure was arrived at and just wanted to make sure that it was sufficient to cover low-income individuals. And then the third point that we wanted to make, which is the primary source of the discussion today, is the source of the funds and the revenue impact. And I don't know if perhaps I read the bill wrong. I did not discover immediately where it says that the park owner or the landlord would be subsidizing the program. If it does, our members would probably oppose it, but I don't see that in the bill. What I do see is a $50,000 commitment from general fund monies, which represents to me a commitment by the state of Oregon. I believe her name was Josie with Housing and Community Services Department, did come and speak to the Landlord-Tenant Coalition. And I agree with Mr. Connolly. There does need to be a clearinghouse for available programs, because after presenting an outline of the programs that were available, one of the questions put to the housing agency representative was, which of these programs will address those residents in manufactured dwelling parks? And very vague answer, they were not sure, because they're in a special category. They own their homes and they rent the space. And so we were not able to get a straight answer as to which programs were available to the residents. One of the things that Multifamily Housing Council of Oregon would suggest, and I apologize to Senator Atkinson because we didn't run this idea past him, but as I understand it, the bill is here to generate discussion, and one of the things that we would suggest is that I, together with several other of the lobby, were the proponents of the what was originally called the low-income housing account that was originally set up, and it was based on interest from refundable deposits that were placed in various accounts, and that money went to help provide assistance to low-income housing. That program has since evolved. It is now called the Low-Income Rental Housing Fund. And just from what we could tell from reviewing a 1999 to 2001 fiscal analysis is that with 25% of the grant period remaining, there was approximately 60% of funds available. And we're wondering if perhaps the 25% of the LRF funds, as they're now called, that is already administered through the housing department could be set aside for this particular program. And again, we haven't gone into a great deal of discussion about it. We haven't talked with the proponents, but it's, as long as you're looking for ideas to discuss, that might be one source of income that's stable as opposed to some of the other sources being considered. Mr. Chairman, that does conclude my testimony. I was trying to be as brief as possible. If there are questions, I will do my best to respond or artfully dodge, whichever is the case.
Thank you, General.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. And Senator Atkinson, I would like to speak with you regarding the bill as soon as it's convenient for both of us.
Sure. Okay. We will close the public hearing on Bill 559. And I get to my to an agenda here quickly. Okay, let's open a work session on Senate Bill 280.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, when we dealt with bills 280, 281, 282, and 277. I was directed to send them to Legislative Council to have them all merged into Senate Bill 280, and that is what you have before you today. 280 contains, as near as Legislative Council can do it, everything that was in those bills.
Okay. I don't have a copy of amendments, so.
Well,
I'm assuming that everybody else. Does everyone have a copy of the amendments?
No, I was that's what I was looking for.
We not have the amendments? I assure you they're in my possession somewhere. Well, Mr. Chairman, I apologize for that. And if we can go to another bill, I'll go get these.
Okay, we'll temporarily recess our hearing on Senate Bill 280. We'll go to a work session on House Bill 2557. These committee members, we are holding this work session for the purpose of transferring this bill to another committee. Mr. Putman, you'd like to give us a brief description of what we are up to, about to do?
Just that. We were requested by the proponents of the bill to send it to the Senate Committee on Information and Technology. It would work in the committee as we worked the other day, where we need a motion to send it to the floor without recommendation and be referred to the Committee on Information Management and Technology.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senator Gordley moves Senate Bill 2557A to the floor without recommendation to be moved to the Committee on Information Management and Technology. Further discussion? Objection? So ordered. Well, now, do you need a read? Let's do Senate Bill 20. We'll go to a public work session on Senate Bill 20. We have in front of us the amendments to Senate Bill 20. Senator Deckert, you were concerned with this. Your constituents came in. Have you seen the amendments? And
where is it? The dash 2? Just Senate Bill, I have the dash 2s to Senate Bill 20.
I'm getting an indication that it is the dash 2 to Senate Bill 20. You should have a hand and gross version of that with you also.
You drive me up to that. So I'm trying to read the section on public disclosure.
Rob, you want Jones, and we'll come up and enlighten us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Rob Douglas, representing the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants. Three things were added. And one of those specifically is it has to be signed and dated by the client, and you will find that in the dash twos.
So, Rob, just help me find it here, the language in the dash twos that gives the public disclosure. That was my only pickup on this.
Mr. Chairman, on page 3 of the dash twos, starting from line 11, running down through line 21, section A, line 14, clear and conspicuous writing. B, has to be done prior to the referral or the payment method. And C, again, as we discussed, acknowledged in writing and dated by the client.
So, Mr. Chair, so what this does basically is it says to the board, do this without creating a form. Just do that. Do those three things.
It says rule shall require.
Mm-hmm. So. That's correct.
I'm good to go.
All right. Senator Deckard.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendments into Senate Bill 20.
Senator Deckard moves the dash two amendments into Senate Bill 20. Any further discussion? Objections? So ordered. Senator Deckard.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 20 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Deckard moves Senate Bill 20 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion on the motion? Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered, and with Senator Atkinson, we'll let him vote when he comes back. So, Senator Deckard, would you like to carry the bill?
I'd be glad to.
Okay. Thank you. We will wait to close the work session until Senator Atkinson gets back.
Senator Atkinson's going to vote.
No, he's in the... And then we'll wait for our paperwork on Senate Bill 280. Boy, this crowd's just spinning out like crazy now.
I know the committee might leave.
You can't leave now. It's your first work session. We just had a quorum.
Oh, yeah? Watch.
Bar the doors.
We could have Ted Hughes come up and tell us how to play pitch.
Yeah, come tell a good joke, Ted.
How many cards? Senator Atkinson, how do you vote on Senate Bill 20?
Hard punishment stuff, there is that.
4 seconds closed.
Where were you, Senator Atkinson? No, never mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. For the record,
we are in recess on the work session of Senate Bill 280 as we're waiting for the amendment.
Go
back on the record. Okay.
Funny.
We are in work session for Senate Bill 280.
You know that.
We now have a copy of the Dash 1 amendments in possession of the committee.
Carol Reeves, Carol, is here.
Carol, would you?
Thank you.
Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Carol Reeves. For the record, I'm the administrator for the Board of Accountancy.
Okay. You have gone through these amendments?
I have. At the public hearing, the committee requested that the four bills that were before you be combined into a single bill. Senate Bill 280 had the appropriate relating clause, so that's the bill that was chosen by your committee administrator. And this Senate Bill 280 now includes Senate Bill 277, which was our bill on substantial equivalency. Senate Bill 280 itself which is the bill on compilation services. Senate Bill 281, which was the bill that dealt with registration of firms that are outside of the state of Oregon. And Senate Bill 284, which was the bill that dealt with authorizing the board to maintain jurisdiction over an individual even though he may have resigned his certificate in order to avoid an investigation.
Okay. I see on your notes here you have on one change on page 5. Is there an error in the amendment?
No, there was an error on my part when I submitted the bill. In going through the second time, I see there's something that it would be more advantageous for the board to determine by rule. I mentioned it to Mr. Putman today when I realized it, and he suggested that may be an amendment that we could bring in at the House,
okay,
when it goes to the House.
And Mr. Chairman, I do have with me the fiscal and revenue impacts on the -1 amendments. I know they exist, and there is no fiscal impact with the combined amendments.
Okay.
I move those amendments, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Decker moves the -1 amendments in the Senate Bill 280. Objections? So ordered. Senator Decker.
I move that bill to the floor with a
Senator
due
Decker
pass
moves
that bill.
The Senate Bill 280 has amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation for the discussion. Any objections? So ordered.
Thank you. And Friday afternoon, you could all...
Thank you, committee members, for your attention on this late hour. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We need a carry. You want to carry him out of the county, Bill?
I will.
Senator Decker will carry him both.
Oh, hey, thank you very much.
We're adjourned.
Not bad.
You'll see you.